In 1918, 100 years ago today, England and France, having already lowered one man each into an unknown grave, came to the table alongside America, the other allies, Germany, and Germany's allies. The tombs in England and France became each nation's tomb of the unknown soldier. 3 years later, the United States would follow suit. The day became known as Armistice Day. Armistice means truce, and it constitutes an agreement between two opposing forces to lay down their arms. Today remained Armistice Day for 36 years until President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed a bill to rename it Veterans Day. Yes, he did, 36 years later. We as a nation will celebrate it tomorrow. The reason that we do that is because companies and government agencies want to give their employees an extra day off, and that's why they changed all that. But today is actually Veterans Day. At the time that Eisenhower signed his bill, it was determined that they would keep an honor guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. From that time forward, 24 hours a day, we have Army members standing guard at the tomb. Most of you guys have seen that. On Memorial Day in 1958, an American soldier from World War II and another from Korean War were laid beside the soldier from World War I at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. In 1984, another man from the Vietnam War was laid at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. According to Pastor Tony Evans, throughout the 4,000 years of recorded human history, there have only been 268 years without a major war someplace in the world, out of 4,000 years. The military is in the news a lot these days. Misinformed people who protest our military, even some who call themselves Christians, and they go to the funerals of military members and hurl insults and scorn and cursings at the families of people who've died in our wars. Christians whose opinions are formed because they're too lazy to read what God actually says about war and veterans in the Bible. They say no Christian should ever serve in the military. Wrong. It's exactly the opposite of what the Bible says. Romans 13:1. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Now listen, this isn't a political thing. Who put President Trump in office? That's A. God did. Now listen, that's hard for people to accept, and here's the reason. Because if you accept that God put President Trump in office, you also have to accept that God put Adolf Hitler in office and Joseph Stalin in office. It's hard to accept those things if you just see the small picture. We have done and will do sermons on those things, but that's not for today. God didn't ask for our opinion on this, by the way. Okay. He doesn't care if we like it or not. He's the one who established it. This passage ends three verses later in Romans 13:4. For he, that would be the president, king, the prime minister, is the minister of God to thee, you, the people, for good. But if you do that which is evil, Hitler, Stalin, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that does evil. Why is the president, the king, the prime minister, etc., why are they put in office by God? What's the purpose? It says so right there. To rid the world of evil. That's the purpose of the military. Every military. From King David up through today, that's the purpose. God said so. Let me ask you guys something. Like him or not like him, since the new administration took effect 2 years ago, has anybody heard one single attack from ISIS? One. Can you name one attack from ISIS, biggest terrorist group in the world? One? That means our president and our military are doing their job. Now listen, if this sounds like a political sermon or a military sermon, you need to pay closer attention. All we've done is laid the groundwork here about what God says clearly in his word about our leaders and our military personnel. This is important because I know people who've lived their whole lives with regret because they fought in wars and they had to kill somebody. And they lived their whole lives regretting that. Listen, they shouldn't. Being a soldier is a calling from God, and it's a righteous thing. The military has a God-mandated purpose to rid the world of evil. Listen, I believe that serving in the military is a calling from God, just like pastoring a church is. I'm proud of you guys. So relax, take a deep breath, get comfortable. I'm going to tell you guys a couple stories. They have happy endings, these stories. They have tragic endings. It all depends on how you listen to the story. Okinawa, 350 miles from mainland Japan. It was the last island that we had to capture, the last major battle of World War II. Some of you guys may know the story of Okinawa because they made it into a movie called Hacksaw Ridge a couple years ago about a guy named Corporal Desmond Doss. Doss was a pacifist. He didn't believe in carrying the gun, but he did believe in serving in the military. And so Doss, all he carried with him was his Bible. And he single-handedly went into a war zone and saved 75 men's lives. So you probably know you may know Okinawa from that. That's just one of the stories. There's a whole lot more to it. Okinawa was the last major island before getting to Japan, to the Japanese mainland. We're at the end of the war here. It was vital that we capture Okinawa. Because back then, they didn't have planes that could fly around the world. Okay, you could only go from here to Newark. And you had to refuel. You had to land and refuel, okay? So you couldn't do what we do today. And for you young kids, this isn't all that long ago. We're talking 75 years ago, 70 years ago. That's not all that long ago. So it's vital that we capture this. So they went back and forth. The powers that be back in Washington are going back and forth with the military. Do we fight conventionally and do we attack Japan? Or do we continue to develop this new weapon of mass destruction? And they agonized over this. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And so they went back and forth. Listen, the building of the atomic bomb was so secret that the Vice President of the United States wasn't aware of it. After FDR died a couple of months before the war ended, Truman became president, and they said, oh, we better fill him in on what we're doing here. It was so secret, even though they had tens of thousands of people working on this. But here's how they would do it, okay? These guys over here, Rachel and Jason, are working on this one little switch. They have no idea what that switch goes to, but that's all their job is. And then they send it over here to Tennessee, and Cheryl has a part over here. She puts together this other component over here. Has no idea what it is. And then from Cheryl, they send it over here to Tim and Deb, and they're working on a little piece over here, and they have no idea what it is. And this is how secret the atomic program was at the time. And so they're agonizing over this. Do we want to develop this weapon that will change the world forever? Or are we going to send our military men into a zone where a lot of them are not going to come home? People were varied in their opinions over dropping the atom bombs, most because they don't know the truth. Way, way, way more Japanese people died from regular bombing than the atom bombs. The atom bombs are just one big boom. But a lot more people died from conventional bombing. But listen, that's not why we used the atom bombs, to kill a bunch of people. Germany had already surrendered, but the Japanese were willing to fight to the last man, woman, and child. Literally, they were literally willing to die as a race of people to win this war. They saw Americans and everybody else as subhuman. Which brings us back to Okinawa. America suffered 49,000 casualties on that little island. 13,000 of those were deaths. The Japanese numbers were 2.5 times worse. Okinawa is 1/299th the size of mainland Japan. In other words, you can fit 299 Okinawas in Japan. The estimates that over 1 million Americans and 3 million Japanese would have probably died taking Japan are way underestimated. Simple math shows that the numbers are way higher than that. Japanese casualties would have reached close to 30 million people. Now compare that to the 200,000 people that died in the atomic bomb blast combined, and it starts to come into focus why we had to drop a bomb. We didn't want to send millions of our young people, listen, 17, 18, 19, we didn't want to send them storming the beaches of Japan and get mowed down when we could do something by dropping a bomb from the air. But listen, those are just the numbers. They're not the stories. Be patient, Jesus is on the way. Story from Okinawa. Major Henry Courtney was ordered to form a defensive position on Sugar Hill. Had just a few men with him, not a lot. During the night, he weighed his options. They were to hold the hill the next morning. He weighed his options, and he thought that the worst thing he could do was wait until daylight the next day when the Japanese could attack. So Major Courtney advanced alone toward the enemy positions. Listen, the Japanese were trained. They were experts at terrain warfare, hiding. If you haven't read it, you should read Flags of Our Fathers. Listen, don't go see the movie. Read the book, Flags of Our Fathers. My brother Joel says, and he's right, it should be required reading for every student in America to graduate. It tells you what our military goes through. So what would happen on, so these guys are experts at this. So you'd see flat ground like our carpet here, okay? And what the Japanese would do is they had miles and miles and miles of tunnels running under here. We're talking about Iwo Jima here. And they would pop up, couldn't even see it. It was so well disguised. Grab an American, take him down under, gone. And then at night, the American soldiers would have to listen to their comrades being tortured under the sands that they were fighting on. So Major Courtney advances alone, and he knew because of how they fought that they would be in specific places. And so as he went along, he would throw grenades into caves, destroying the enemy, killing a whole bunch of them. Cresting the ridge, he comes up over the ridge, and 100 yards away, he sees the Japanese organizing for an attack on his position. He ran headfirst into battle, killing a whole bunch of guys and forcing the rest of the unit to retreat by himself. Seeing his bravery, the rest of his men followed him and gave chase, and soon the Japanese regrouped. There was a furious firefight. Courtney ordered his men to dig in. Major Henry Courtney was killed by an enemy mortar shell as he was going from foxhole to foxhole, encouraging these young 16, 17, 18-year-old kids to be brave when they were scared to death. And he gave his life so that these guys could live. Sergeant Leanne Hester was out on patrol when her convoy was ambushed and came under heavy machine gun fire and grenade fire. As soon as her vehicle stopped, she was out, going towards the enemy, her and one other guy. It was March 20th, 2005. Leanne and the other guy were the only ones brave enough to leave the relative safely of the overturned Humvee. The two crossed over a berm, entered the trench from where the enemy was firing. Soon the guns fell silent, and her comrades feared the worst. And as the smoke cleared, they saw three figures walking to them. Two of them were Americans, and one of them was a captured Iraqi terrorist. When they went to inspect the trench, they found that Sergeant Hester and her comrade had killed 27 enemy soldiers, wounded six others, and taken another one hostage. For her act of extreme bravery, Sergeant Leanne Hester became only the second woman since World War II to receive the Silver Star. Listen, her unit lived to fight another day because she was willing to die so that others might live. Haven't heard any mention of Jesus yet, Brian. This is church, right? Late spring, 30 AD, a detachment has gone out to face the enemy, leaving behind the rest of the battalion. The leader tells the three men he's taken with him, "Stand watch, I'm going to go scout out the enemy." The enemy has been waiting for this moment. He has the leader right where he wants him. If he succeeds in taking out the leader, the whole platoon will go on the run. The leader became sorrowful, very sad. Pastor Matthew Poole says the Greek words here says, the greatest sorrow one can imagine. The leader awaits orders from headquarters. When they arrived, he isn't excited about the message he receives. Three men left on guard duty fall asleep. The leader presses on alone. He tries to make sense of the orders that he's just received. Are you sure? Is this how we're going to handle this? Is this the only way to handle this? He's sweating now, but salt and water aren't pouring from his pores. Blood is. Before the whipping, before the crown of thorns, great drops of blood are pouring from his body. He cries aloud, "Dad! I don't want to do this! Find another way!" The temple is not too far away. It's Passover. Tens of thousands of people have come to Jerusalem to sacrifice lambs for the forgiveness of sins in the temple. Jesus can hear the bleeding of thousands of lambs. The air is heavy with the scent of blood from all the sacrificed animals. It's become a ritual. It's almost a party atmosphere for the people. But not here. Not in Gethsemane. The very name Gethsemane means oil press, where they squeeze the life out of anything. There's a firefight going on. He returns to his three fellow soldiers. He wakes them up. "Stay awake. The enemy has us surrounded." The commander goes off again to confront the enemy. He's scared. Fear brings out the champion in people. He falls on his face, and once again he contacts a general back at headquarters. "Dad!" The phrase is actually, "Daddy! Isn't there another way to end this war?" But there's no General Patton coming, no King David, no Napoleon, no great military leaders, and no great thinkers are going to show up to save the day. He's going to have to fight alone against a relentless, calculating, dreadful enemy. We've all seen the picture. We've seen it like this. Can you put up slide one, Zach, please? We've all seen the picture. Here's Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Peaceful, serene, really nice. Jesus has this nice calm look on his face. Beautiful evening. Might as well just be any other evening. Going home, going to turn the game on in half an hour. But look, if you look closely down here, you can see the sign of things to come. These are thorn bushes. But this is how we picture this night. "Hey, Dad, listen, I'm in a jam here. If you could help me out, that'd be great." The truth is a lot harsher in the Bible. Blood is falling in great droplets around Jesus. His head is bowed in anguish. Dread fills his existence. It looks more like this. Keep our next slide up, Zach, please. Jesus is agonizing over what to do. Our commander is in the fight for his life, and he fights alone. The battle rages on. We don't know how long this went on, but I don't see Jesus offering a quick, get me out of this jam, Dad, prayer. At last, he sends word back to headquarters. If it has to be this way, then let's get to it. Jesus trusted that Dad, God the Father, knew what he was doing. At the end of this opening battle of the war, Jesus is exhausted. He is so worn out. He's been pouring out his soul to God the Father. And he's drained of all his energy. He has nothing left to expend. Can you put the next slide up, please, Zach? So God sends an angel to comfort him. You could almost hear the angel here as Jesus lays his head in the bosom of the angel. You could almost hear the angel saying, it's going to be okay. We're going to get through this together. I'm going to be here to help you. This is what really went on that night. It wasn't a peaceful, lovely evening. Our leader returns back to the other three. He wakes them up. Back to the unit, boys. Round one goes to our commander. This right here, this night, this is when your souls got salvation. Not when he hung on a cross, not when he died on a cross, not when he rose from the grave. Right here is when he won the fight for your souls. The enemy quickly regroups and rounds up his forces. Private First Class William Albert Foster from Cleveland, Ohio, was a point man on a perimeter defense waging an assault against furious Japanese soldiers. They're in Okinawa. It's May 2nd, 1945. Exactly 4 months from that date, the war will be over. 5 days from that date, Germany will surrender. Up to that point, 220 U.S. servicemen, women, Navy personnel, airmen, 220 Americans died every single day fighting for your freedom. In the last 4 months of the war, that number is going to go way up. As Sally said, it was horrendous. The enemy Japanese soldier threw a grenade, and wham, the lash came down on the back of Jesus. Crowds gathered to watch the spectacle. A whole bunch of people cheered like this was just a bunch of people putting on a play, but this is all too real. His face contorts and his muscles tense as he anticipates the next lash. He gets lost in the pain. His mind enters a dreamlike state as it remembers the words that he himself had directed the prophet Isaiah to write down. Isaiah 53:5. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement, the cost of our peace was upon him. And with his stripes, we are healed. Stripes are the flesh being torn from his back. The next whip finds its mark, and Jesus is snapped back to reality. His flesh is being torn. Nerves scream out in pain. The dreamlike state again. Zechariah 11:12. And I said unto them, if you think it's worth it, give me my price, and if not, forbear, then forget it. So they weighed out for my price 30 pieces of silver. It comes back to him now. Judas, is that all I'm worth? $324? The next blow lands. His back arches as he tries to escape the pain. The enemy grenade lands in the foxhole. It's beyond the reach of Private First Class Foster. For an instant, he stares at the device, not sure, his mind's racing, 1,000 thoughts going through his head at one time, not sure what to do. 1,000 thoughts in a millisecond. The flogging comes to an end. The ordeal was taking its toll. They throw Jesus' robe back on him. By the way, Jesus was naked as he went through all this. They throw his robe back on him. Now picture this, he's bleeding every place. What happens when you put that cloth on him? Blood starts to clot, starts to stick to the robe. The enemy's just getting started. Another trial. For the second time that day, Jesus is declared not guilty. But the crowds wanted blood. And all the people in power, Caiaphas and Pilate and Annas and all these people, all they cared about was their public image, their approval ratings. That's all they cared about. They didn't care about one man. Jesus has thorns driven into his head. Hands that he created land hard, heavy blows against his face. His eyes are swollen shut. The robe is ripped from his body, tearing open the wounds again, bringing the pain back as the blood starts flowing from the wounds that had scabbed over. They put a purple robe on him, purple signifying royalty, and they start mocking him. You know, you really are a king. Look at you. Then they spit in his face. Private Foster is out of time, out of options. He launches himself on top of the grenade. His body absorbs the blast. His insides are torn to shreds. They lead Jesus away to die. Nails are pounded into his hands and his feet. He's unrecognizable as a human being. His body absorbed the blows, and his insides have been torn to shreds. He hangs there now. Life and death are in the balance. Not his, yours. See, it's for this reason he came, to destroy the works of the evil one. For that reason I have come. Miraculously, Private Foster doesn't die immediately. He has 2 hand grenades left. And as he's dying, he reaches into his jacket and he pulls the grenades out. And he hands them to the other guys in the foxhole with him. And he says with his dying breath, make them count. From the cross, he opened his swollen eyes. He looked down through the ages, and he looked at you and me. He pulls his hand from the cross, and he sticks it out and reaches it out to you and me. And he says, this is all I have left to give you, as the last drops of blood fall from his body. And he sticks that hand out to everybody in this room, and he says, make it count. Jesus loves you guys. I love you guys.